It's Friday, and that means it's the 53rd episode of the Zogby Report, real and unscripted, with me, John Zogby, and my son and partner, Jeremy Zogby. How are you doing this week?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, and there's an elephant in the room that we have to talk about. We had an inauguration. And so we want to talk a little bit about the inauguration and the impact. And then I kind of want to end on a personal note, not so much about me and not at all about you, but about someone else and that I think is being treated very unfairly. And I will I'll save that until the end. It's just something that, as always, just came to me just a few minutes ago. But so we had an inauguration, and I just wrote my first weekly report card for the Washington Examiner on Joe Biden and his first 3 days in office. And I gave him a good grade, gave him an A, not because I'm a knee-jerk Democrat. I just gave him an A. Number one, because I gave Trump an A for his inaugural, and I gave Obama an A for his first inaugural. I think a president should get a honeymoon. But anyway, but I also liked what he said simply because there was no drama. First of all, there was no drama in the streets, at least that we know about. And that was a good thing because everyone was kind of on high alert. But also no drama in the sense that maybe this just wasn't the time for a new deal, a new frontier, or the hopefulness of the magnanimity of Barack Obama, but instead just some maturity, reduction of the decibel level, no grand promises except I'm experienced, I know this town, and I'm going to work very, very hard, and a lot of empathy. And so in that regard, I gave Biden's first inaugural, I think, a well-deserved A. How about you? What if you were grading?
I'm a terrible person to ask because I try to put myself in your shoes. You've been doing that, I think, since day one. So when after Biden's first term, that will have been grading for 12 years. I couldn't see myself doing that week after week. My first answer is, and this should come as no surprise, that I'm critical of people in power. And that's just my approach. I can talk about how I derived at that, but I'm thinking about a famous saying, as the saying goes, and you shall know them by their deeds. So, you know, speeches are wonderful and they lay the groundwork, but really when all said and done, it comes down to action. So let's see what Biden does in his first 100 days. The next thing I guess I would say is that, you know, that just comes from me being, I don't know if I would say I'm a free agent, because a free agent, you know, goes from camp to camp. I think I just find myself in the camp of the truly independent camp. And, you know, I didn't buy into the hype of the last presidency. There were a lot of people who thought that, you know, the promises of Trump and, you know, whether it was draining the swamp or, you know, exposing the corruption behind the scenes. I knew all too well that was rabble rousing. And, you know, that comes from being burned badly. And maybe I can talk about that a little bit later. But why don't you proceed?
So what does Biden have to look out for? Okay, this was, you know, in many ways a typical inauguration where you lay out your mission and you lay out what you hope for. No real specifics, but, you know, you don't usually get that. That's a State of the Union message, which he'll get to do very soon. But what does he have to look out for? We know what he has to do. I mean, he promised action on COVID. He promised action on infrastructure. He promised action on getting the country moving again economically and in terms of health. Obviously, the environment as well was not only a priority for him, for Democrats, but it was the number three issue among 18 to 29 year olds who were a critical constituency. And he promised racial equity as well. But, you know, given that he enters the presidency with a favorable rating in the high 50s, which when you consider that he was elected with 51% of the vote and 47% of the vote was against him. Actually, if you add the other candidates in as well, it comes to 49%. But, you know, given the fact that his numbers have moved, you say, well, he's got some wind at his back. But then you remember that among those people who opposed him, 70% of them don't think he was legitimately elected. So certainly he doesn't have much room for error, does he? But what does he have to look out for now as he moves forward? What are some of the pitfalls that he faces? What do you think?
Well, there's the obvious one is the, and we talked about this the last two episodes, is healing. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to say, because if the past three or four presidencies are any, you know, window into what happens, it's very hard for me to believe that's going to be a real priority. I mean, this country has just become so divided. So in the weeks preceding following the election, the language on both sides was really ramped up. I mean, the analogy is from both the Republicans and from the Democrats was put the pedal to the metal, you know, press hard on the gas. And the rhetoric, I have to say, was extreme on both sides. And how, after putting the pedal to the metal, do you heal? Well, you have to. But is it really going to happen? So, I said this last week, we need to make certain, and I'm going to draw an analogy to September 11th, you know, which really impacted our family. You know, you had a bomb threat. That scared me to death. My uncle, your brother, had death threats following the acts of September 11th. And of course, what followed after September 11th was a general sense of, we need to round up the terrorists and we need to round up the people who may think and may look and may believe what the terrorists believe. And so there was an entire year where if you associated with a certain ideology, you know, that could have been, hey, you're critical of the foreign policy that America conducts, or you're of a certain religious background, or you're of a certain ethnic background, you were terrified, and we were part of that. And what I'm afraid I could be emerging is a very similar thing, but this time directed towards right-wing ideology. You know, with this talk of we may need, or we're going to need, new domestic terror legislation to stop it dead in its tracks. That really brings me back to what we felt in 2001, and what would give me great relief if President Joe Biden were listening right now would be a commitment to not go down that path. That is very scary. It's very dangerous, and it is not who we profess to be. So that's the most immediate thing. Of course, there's the economy. There's COVID-19. you know, the potential for locking down the country. Do you lock down or do you take more of an approach like the country of Sweden? Well, I don't think that's going to happen in the United States. But so, you know, that's mainly what I'm looking at.
All right. So, you know, lots said there. Let me just share some thoughts and then we'll move on. So in the first 72 hours now, there have been a whole series of executive orders. By last count, 29. I don't know what's may have gone on in the last hour or so, but pretty wide ranging. We have rejoined by executive order the Paris treaty, and John Kerry is kind of leading the charge there. We've rejoined the World Health Organization, and Dr. Anthony Fauci has already made his appearance there and is talking about being liberated. We have every indication that there will be another COVID relief package. We know what the president wants. He wants an additional $1,400 per person per eligible individuals and families, but at the same time, more low interest loans for businesses, a moratorium on evictions, and so on. All of which I think are a good thing, very positive. You know, obviously, spending that kind of money drives the national debt over, you know, just an unprecedented figure of $30 million. But no one really ran this year for president or for Congress and either party as a fiscal hawk. There are just some times when that doesn't work. So I think he's come out of the gate and come out of the gate a la FDR in the middle of a crisis that is worsening, clearly worsening. So unemployment applications are up, but more important than that, over 4,000 people a day are dying, projected to hit 500,000 in short order by mid-February. So aggressive action is necessary. By the same token, a very weak majority in Congress. He needs every single Democratic vote. And it doesn't sound very likely that he can count on any Republicans. He may be able to, but it doesn't seem like he can. And so there are pitfalls out there, to be sure. By the same token, I think there's a re-energized press. So yesterday, you know, he had announced that 100 million people will be vaccinated in 100 days. And initially, folks gasped. You know, 100 million is a huge number. But a reporter asked him yesterday, isn't that weak? And the president said, come on, give me a break, man. You know, he's been on the job at that point all of about 24 hours. So I don't know. I'm going to say it. For me, it's good to have an adult back in the White House. And that is, whether you agree with him or not, it's just good to have somebody who has a steady hand of experience. And so for that, color me moderately hopeful.
Yeah. I'm not optimistic, and it has nothing to do with Biden. Whoever was going to inherit this term, this presidency, even if there was a re-election, it's still, I'm going to change my wording here, and it's not going to be, you know, necessarily a sensible analogy, but I'm going to say it's still a wounded ship, right? It doesn't really make sense to say a wounded ship, but I think you see what adjective I don't want to use with a next.
Oh, I, I do. The problems are still out there. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. The forces that drive us apart are still out there, both in terms of human resources and electronic resources. And but something has to give, and something has to start somewhere. And I think this was a good start. I want to shift topics. This may be a little surprising to you. This is about Kellyanne Conway, and it's bigger and broader than Kellyanne Conway. I know Kellyanne. I've known her for years. I like her. I think she's very, very smart. I personally have always had a difficulty with partisan polling. You know, when everything fits and is packaged neatly into your ideology, leaving very little room for, you know, an objective or dispassionate analysis. But that aside, I also know that that being visible has become a passion with Kelly, always maneuvering to get on TV, to get in the media, to be talked about, to be photographed, and so on. So the fact that she is having and has had now a serious domestic crisis with her teenage daughter, and that her teenage daughter is posting all sorts of audio and video about what really should be private moments. I mean, the daughter is charging abuse, and that may very well be, but I'm old fashioned. Issues like that belong with child protective services and belong with the law enforcement. They don't belong on social media. They don't belong as headlines on Drudge. And I feel badly for Kellyanne. I feel badly for her daughter, Claudia. I feel badly for the other children in that household. And I'm sickened that this is how far we've gone off the deep end, that these sorts of things get played out and played up big. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when that first hit. Was about a couple or a few months ago. I saw it on Drudge, but I wasn't aware that it was continuing. I have no comment other than I'm sure in, you know, what is perhaps the most ambitious city in the world, that is Washington, D.C., that there are a whole host of parents who dedicate 99.9% of their energy to themselves and their career and their advancement and their legacy, and maybe outsource their job to other outlets to care for their children. It doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they're focusing on it. I would like us to not you and I, but us as a country to just move beyond the past administration. But the fact that they're still harping on the past administration just kind of gives me a cynical outlook that, you know, look, Joe Biden is going to face severe problems. He is going to face very big challenges, and he's going to make a lot of mistakes. And I'm going to say that there's a snowball chance in hell that he is going to be successful, not because of Joe Biden, but because where this has all been, this has been brewing for well over a decade. But what that signals to me is, you know, there's going to be a desire to, as Biden faces more challenges, to say, well, you know what, that's just the leftover stuff from the Trump presidency. I mean, we saw that, during Trump. Oh, well, it was Obama. We saw that during Obama. Oh, well, you know, it was George W. Bush. It's childish, and we really need to move beyond that and focus on this administration.
I totally agree. And I think we'll leave on a note of agreement. Hope springs eternal. I'm going to be hopeful. I know like you, all the pitfalls that exist, the roadblocks that are just automatically set up. I know, and I've seen the system in total dysfunction. And I'm going to hope and pray that this new president, who I believe is a good man, can kind of cut through that and make some progress. God writes straight with crooked lines. You've heard me say that before, because that's what an old Jesuit theology teacher taught me over 50 years ago. And so on that note, why don't we end? Do you have anything final to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's you've said that for years, and I've given that a lot of thought as somebody who passionately studies history. You know, in other words, that's essentially saying that history, to a degree, is linear. I mean, of course, there are setbacks, but there's always moving forward. I tend to see history more cyclically or seasonally, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to apologize, but I want to say to our listeners that, you know, this is just the nature of being in the first hours of a new presidency, that I'm trying to accumulate more data and information to see where this is headed. And I've been a little bit vague, although I in other ways I've been very clear, but as time goes, I will have more thorough analysis and a more thorough outlook than what I had just presented.
Okay, well, this week I was Francis I and you were Thomas Aquinas. That's fair. They're both winners, right?
I'll take Thomas Aquinas. That far exceeds anything that I would have expected.
All right, I love you. And I love the next generation who I hear in the background.
Yeah, we love you too.
Okay, have a good week. Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.